It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we reflect on the history of a mill town in the Northern Panhandle.
National tells Weirton, "We're cutting our ties with you. You're a loser. You have to go. You can either shut it down or your employees can buy it." Called the ESOP. Employee Stock Ownership.
We'll have that story coming up. Stay with us. This is West Virginia Morning. Coal miners have, for 5 days, been blocking a train track in Cumberland, Kentucky. They say they won't move until their now bankrupt employer pays them back wages. Sydney Bowles reports a hearing today could determine whether and when protesting miners get their paychecks.
The days-long blockade began when five out-of-work miners blocked a coal train to protest delayed payment from employer Black Jewel Coal.
If they can load a train out, they can give us our money.
Since then, the protest has grown to dozens of miners and supporters and attracted national media attention and visit from campaigning politicians. Black Jewel workers have gone without pay since the end of June, when, miners said, paychecks bounced without warning. Black Jewel owes over 1,000 workers in Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia more than $11 million in unpaid wages. Protesters have vowed to remain on the tracks until they get the paychecks they're owed. The federal bankruptcy judge hearing the Black Jewel case has expressed sympathy for the unpaid miners, but has not yet forced the company creditors to pay them. Sam Petzonk is an attorney with West Virginia's Mountain State Justice and is representing miners from Black Jewel's Eastern Division. He says whether or not miners get paid depends on how much money comes from the sale of Black Jewel's assets.
Not all of the Eastern employees may be called back to work because of the auction. And so the proceeds of that auction must be sufficient to pay the unpaid wages for the non-returning employees.
Miners plan to attend a court hearing Monday in West Virginia when a judge may decide whether to approve the Black Jewel sale and whether miners get their money. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:46. Areas of fog this morning, becoming partly sunny today. There's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and low 90s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Still a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and 80s. Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Yeager Airport CRW, West Virginia's gateway to the world. More at YeagerAirport.com. We continue a podcast series from the Northern Panhandle this morning. The series is called What Happened to Weirton? In the third episode, titled As Goes the Mill, reporter Ella Jennings traces the town's history as it slides back from boom to bust. Here's a segment of that episode.
Just 6,693 people lived in Hancock County in 1900. By 1942, more than 13,000 people were working at Weirton Steel. The mill would continue to employ around 12,000 workers for the next few decades, making it the state's largest employer and taxpayer. Enzo Fracasso, a former steelworker who now serves on the Weirton City Council, remembers how the mill and the city provide an idyllic setting for a comfortable blue-collar life.
It was fun growing up here in Weirton, and the mill was always in my everyday life, really. I mean, my grandfather worked in the mill, my father worked in the mill, my brother, myself, you know, I mean, the mill made a lot of people, tens of thousands of people, you know, raise a family, send children to school, you know, live the American dream, I guess.
Everyone who's lived in a steel town knows there's a dangerous price to pay for this American dream. 120 people have died in the mill, and their deaths were rarely gentle. Enzo filled me in on some of these tragedies. One time, a man was crushed by a steel coil.
it was something he did every day for 25 years. One day it didn't work. And he paid the ultimate price. From what they told me, they had to shovel him into a bag. A coil with 10, 11 tons that you don't have, you're done. I mean, you're, it's like stepping on a bug. A lot of gruesome stuff that can happen and has happened.
Regardless of the dangers, the citizens of Weirton in the Ohio Valley stayed committed to the mill, and the area was seen as an example of the growth and progress of the United States. Unfortunately, it would eventually become a poster child of decline. When other countries rebuilt after World War II and revitalized their manufacturing sectors, they became less dependent on steel from the United States. In 1950, the U.S. produced about half of the world's raw steel. By 1977, it was less than 20%. At the same time, U.S. manufacturers began to capitalize on the cheap foreign steel. As the American steel industry declined, National Steel, Weirton's parent company, started taking profits from Weirton and investing elsewhere. National went from the fourth largest steel company in the country to the fourth largest savings and loans institution. To make matters worse, National started investing in aluminum, despite Weirton Steel being the second largest tin producer in the country. Following the onset of the early 1980s economic recession, on March 2, 1982, National announced they were going to divest completely from their Weirton branch. John Bolzano told me what happened.
National tells Weirton, "We're cutting our ties with you. You're a loser. You have to go. You can either shut it down or your employees can buy it. Called the ESOP. Employee Stock Ownership.
Employee Stock Ownership Plans, or ESOPs, were very popular at this time. They offered lucrative tax incentives and gave workers more ownership of their company through stock options that were normally only available to private investors. And ESOPs provided disengaged owners a way to sell their company to already invested employees, as finding an outside buyer might be impossible. It would have cost National $420 to $770 million in shutdown costs and pension liabilities to close up shop. Their best option was to sell Weirton Steel to the workers themselves. Charles Verano illustrated that this was somewhat of a forced choice for the workers.
But it was forced because they were kind of facing, you know, the demise of the town. You know, as I start off the book, the mill goes, so does the town. And that had happened to a lot of places around there. You know, I mean, at that point, all I had to do was look over to Pittsburgh and the Monongahela Valley. And what it looked like was just, you know, shut down plants and people leaving.
To make the deal possible, workers were told their pay would need to be cut by 20%. They also needed to spend $1 billion in the first 10 years of employee ownership on capital investments to upgrade the plant. Weirton Steel employees and citizens banded together to secure their town's future. There were parades and donations from basically every business in town, benefit drives and telethons. The whole town rallied around saving the mill. "We can do it" became the town's new motto, and they would do it. On September 23, 1983, 7,700 workers voted to implement the ESOP. And on January 10, 1984, Weirton Steel Corporation was born. The first 5 years of the ESOP proved profitable. However, Mark Gliptas, president of the USW 2911 in Weirton, thinks these profits only came from special tax incentives given to ESOPs at the time.
They went from losing money or not being viable to all of a sudden making money. They're making money because they had these advantages that the government were giving them, not because they changed the underlying fundamentals of the company to be successful. And you have about 5 years of time to do that. Then if you don't do it, then you'll be losing money again. And we made money the first 5 years before we start losing money again.
Every year, the company laid off more workers, blaming stagnating markets, new EPA regulations that required expensive pollution control updates, free trade policies such as NAFTA, and foreign dumping. In 1998, Weirton was no longer the largest employer in West Virginia. Walmart was. Fewer and fewer employees were called back after each round of layoffs, and the workers took an emotional toll as job security became a thing of the past. Enzo told me he had many friends who took their own lives from the stress of the mill's downfall. One time, while Enzo was cutting grass, a close friend of his randomly dropped by.
You know, we were just talking. He goes, hey, he goes, it was good knowing you. So what are you talking about, good knowing me? What the hell are you talking about, you know? What do you mean good knowing? I know you. I'll know you tomorrow, too, you know? And he goes, you know, it was fun working with you. And I said, okay. I said, well, I'll see you work tomorrow, you know? Didn't think nothing of it. Night he went home. I mean, he was going, because I talked to a few other guys that we worked with. He said he stopped and saw them, too. Talked to them. And he went home that night, left a note, killed himself. I think that was job related, because he was like really stressed out. I know, I've known a lot of them. I probably, more than I want to know, I can tell you that.
By 1999, just under 5,000 workers remained. Hundreds of those workers and Weirton citizens rallied in Washington, D.C., pushing for protectionist policies for the steel industry. President George W. Bush took the biggest stand for the steel industry 3 years later when he instated tariffs on steel imports in 2002. Mark Gliptis recalls trying to convince President Bush to continue with the tariffs after a year of their imposition.
I said, Mr. Bush, what are you planning to do on a midterm review of the tariffs on your Fair Trade Act? And he said, we will stay the course. That's a quote from in the White House from Bush. And I said, I'm glad you said that, because we have put together, we the steel industry, 3-year strategies to get us back on our feet. We appreciate you doing the tariffs, evoking the tariffs. That's going to help, but there's 3-year strategies. And it will be devastating if you revoke the tariffs in the midterm review. He goes, I'm going to stay the course. That was Friday. Monday, he revoked them.
Bush called off the tariffs in 2003, and the short-term effort failed to save an industry that had lost hundreds of thousands of jobs since the 1960s. Mark Gliptis placed full blame on the government for the fall of the steel industry in the United States.
And when you went to Washington, and I've been to Washington 50, 60 times, and you walk in the senator's office or a congressman, and they will tell you, what about the economy of Thailand? And what about these foreign countries? What about their economies? They have a right to work. They have a right to make a living. They were so worried about the foreign countries. So, well, what about my people? Okay, well, you have plenty of jobs. I said, no, Walmart's not hiring anymore. Okay. And they deliberately made a systematic decision to shut down the steel industry in this country.
Automation had also been impacting manufacturing employment for many years. A new type of steel mill, called the mini mill, began dominating the steel landscape. Mini mills require far less manpower to operate and produced about half of the steel made in the U.S. in 2002. So, nearly 20 years after the ESOP deal was signed, Weirton Steel filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on May 19, 2003. The mill officially needed a new buyer, and this time, the employees weren't able to save the business.
That was Ella Jennings, creator of the podcast, What Happened to Weirton? You can hear the rest of that episode called As Goes the Mill online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.